Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber. This week on Red Inca, we look at the greatness of Elise Perry with our resident expert.
Estelle Vasudevan, I work for you at Good Areas.
We look at Perry's WPL comeback, being the face of the sport for almost 20 years, reinventing herself as a T20 player, athleticism, professionalism, career in football, and how she made 27% of RCB's runs. In 2020 and 2021, Elise Perry averaged low 30s in T20 cricket with a strike rate of 92. At that stage, I was thinking to myself, oh, she's going the Mitali Raj way of like, just kind of, she hasn't caught up with the game. And she was never a particularly quick score in T20 cricket. Like she was around 105, 110, but that's a big drop. And also, most importantly for her, no one could get her out for years, right? People were starting to get her out a little bit more. Clearly, she has gone back, and then eventually Australia dropped her, right? And that's a big thing because she was Australian women's cricket for like two decades. And so for her not to be around, that was a big thing. She has just won the final. Won the tournament for RCB. She took a 6-wicket haul after basically not bowling at the first part of the tournament. She made runs as well. I've got her record here. So she averaged in this tournament 69, was it? Is that right? Yeah, 69 at a strike rate of 125. So really, really good. What happened? Why is Elise Perry good again? I know why she's good to begin with, but why is she re-good?
Yeah, and also she made like, I think 27% of RCB's runs overall. So 1/4 of it.
What, for the whole tournament?
Yeah.
That's a good number. Which,
yeah, like yeah. Just decided that she wanted to be a better player, didn't she? I mean, like you said, I don't think she was a particularly... She wasn't a big hitter ever in her career. But I think with getting dropped, it's kind of a mindset shift. Like when you talk about Elise Perry, the talent is obviously there. The ability is obviously there, right? The only areas that you can work on is then the mindset. I know she had done an interview where she spoke about how, you know, with technique and physical stuff, right? There's always a ceiling to how far you can go. But in terms of the mental side of things, there's always that little bit more that you can explore. And I think that's what she did when she was dropped. It was almost, I mean, who drops Elise Perry, right? I can't think of a team which would have actually gone through with it. Maybe they would have given her like, you know, time, we'll give you this series to get better or whatever. But it's very difficult for me to think of a team who would have actually gone through with it, but they did. And she took it
there's
on.
There's no women's team that would have ever dropped a player. I mean, no one else has ever had a player like her, but there's no women's team. I was trying to think of like, it might be like Viv Richards in 1990, 1991 in West Indies of going, Viv, you know, we've got Carl Hooper and Brian Lara and all these other guys about to come through. You're great, but we could move on from you. But even then, it's just the conversation is hard enough in the first place. But actually going through with it, you've got to give Australia credit for that because it's not a natural thing to do. And if you don't do it, we've seen this so many times before in men's and women's cricket of like players at the end of their careers being shadows of themselves for ages because no one has the courage to say to them, do you know what, you're a bit shit now.
Yeah, and if you look at her career, right? She's basically, I mean, that Australian team has achieved everything there is to achieve in the game. So I wonder if there was also that sense of, you know, your content being how you are because it's bringing the results, right, at the end of the day. But with that, like with being dropped and kind of being told that you're not indispensable, right? And it would have started with the T20 game. We don't know whether she would have being left out of the ODI team as well eventually, right? But I think it was just that kind of, maybe it was that thing that kickstarted her mindset that she needs to change and needs, like, what she's been doing is great, but times are changing. She needs to evolve with the times. She's done that, I think, throughout her career. If I'm not mistaken, she started in the Australian team more as a fast bowler, right?
Yeah.
And then kind of worked her way up the order and became more of a batter in the later stages of her career. So
2009, she started batting at number 10.
Yeah.
And sorry, that's domestic too. I think those are domestic games. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know if it's domestic or international. I'd have to have a look. But it does show you that she wasn't a top-level batter at that point.
Yeah, so that evolution is something that's been part of her career right throughout. And I know following the 2017 and the 2018 World Cup finals, or 16 and 17 losses that Australia faced, as a team, they also evolved, right? And they got kind of better at staying ahead of the pack. So this was kind of her wake-up call, I suppose, that she needs to evolve. What I like about it is, I mean, you know, coming from a Sri Lankan background and seeing how, you know, a player like Elise Perry would never have been dropped. And even if she was dropped, there would have been a lot of conversation about, you know, she should be in the team. Look at what she's done. Look at what she's achieved. But that really wasn't the case, was it? She took it in her stride and she took it as a challenge and was able to kind of overcome it. I think in 2022 and 2023, she's striking at 160 and 157. Hasn't played too many matches this year. Averaging 82 in 2022 and 45 in 2023 in T20. So
is that international?
That's a huge leap. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the numbers I read out before were domestic and internationals altogether. But you look at her bowling too. So 2020, and this is all T20 cricket, she had a bowling average of 27 and an economy of 6.9. That's good, but it doesn't compare with most of her other years. And then in 2021, she was averaging 34 with the ball and going at 7.8 runs and over. And so for a normal team, she would still get in. If Marizan Kapp had a year like that or 2 years like that, I think South Africa would be like, that's fine. Yeah. We can carry her and she'll hopefully find her form and come back. The problem with Australia is that, like, everyone is producing better numbers than that, right? Like, it's a completely more cutthroat situation. And also, I just want to get to the sort of the culture of it as well. I remember when Ricky Ponting was struggling towards the end of his career, and I wrote a piece going, the best of Ricky Ponting is gone. Put it up on Crick Info. For about 3 months, my email box was full of people just like, they couldn't understand it. And I must have written that piece in around, 2010, 2011. And you go back and you read his book, and he says, you know, I was finished by 2010, 2011. Mm-hmm. And that's not saying I'm a genius. What I'm saying is it was clear, but no one was going to go up to Ricky Ponting and say that to him, right? And in the end, Australia dropped Simon Cattish, who was batting better than Ricky Ponting, because they had Simon Cattish, Mike Hussey, and Ricky Ponting all on the team. They were all in their late 30s. They had to get rid of one. And they literally went, well, we can't get rid of Ponting. And I do think if the media around the women's team was stronger, I'm not sure it would have been as easy to let Elise Perry sort of just disappear for a little bit. But the other side of it is that Ricky Ponting's a great men's player, and there's been great men's players and there've been great women's players. Elise Perry is more than that, because for the longest time, she was the face of Australian women's cricket, but she was also the face of global women's cricket. Like, if you think back to, you know, the only person who was close is Charlotte Edwards. And Charlotte Edwards is not Elise Perry, right? They're just very different kinds of people. You know, Elise Perry is, you know, just more natural when it comes to, you know, dealing with the press and wanting to be in front of a camera and all those basic things. Charlotte Edwards, even though now they people still try and make her into a commentator, she'd prefer to be sitting there cleaning someone's bikes and telling them where to bowl in the nets. That's how she's a proper crickety sort of person. Whereas Elise Perry's kind of like, you know, something else. And you go back to, you know, Zoe Goss and Belinda Clark and Catherine Fitzpatrick. There's always been Australian women's cricketers that were known. But again, big difference between that and being the face of the game. And some of that had disappeared, right? Just because the team's so good. Like, at a certain point, you know, and Meg Lanning comes along and, you know, Ash Gardner comes along and all these other players come along. But again, you're not just dropping a player, right? You are literally dropping the player who started the revolution, you know, whether she meant to or not. you know, someone who chose cricket when there wasn't any money in cricket, right? When she kicks that, was it goal, the World Cup final in 2010 or 2011 in that women's football, was it 2010? She could have picked that sport. Probably would have been slightly richer if she had. although maybe not. I don't know. All things considered, could have gone either way. But, you know, she could have gone down that path and got involved with football. She picks cricket. She does all this stuff and she is the face of it. It's a very different. And the one thing I would say is it would have been very easy with everything I've just said that in 2020, 2021, her future career is sorted, right? She's never not going to be famous in the women's game. She's always going to be the person that we talk about. You know, one of the greatest players that have ever played the game. And she could have just disappeared. It says something about her that she went the opposite way and dug back in. And I think we forget some of the stuff about how tough she is. You know, we know that she's bowled in a World Cup final with a broken leg and stuff like that. But she doesn't, Meg Lanning looks tough. Right? Like, if we were at a pizza party and there was one piece of pizza and Meg Lanning was on one side of the table and I was on the other side of the table, I would hesitate before I took that piece of pizza, right? Because I would be thinking, Meg won't be happy with this. Whereas if it was Elise Perry, I'd be like, she won't care. I'm just going to take this pizza, right? Like, there is a difference there, but we've forgotten that behind that, Elise Perry is very tough and physically very tough, incredible athlete, but also mentally, the ability to do that so late in her career, I think is phenomenal.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about this when we were doing the piece on Lanning as well, right? About how because they start so early, women's players tend to burn out quicker as well. I think it's been incredible how she seems to still enjoy playing cricket. I mean, if you watched any of the WPL, it feels like she really enjoyed being out there. She enjoyed being part of, you know, the leadership group, or whether it was with the younger players behind the scenes, you know, the various activities they have within the franchise. Same with, you know, international cricket, right? She still seems to kind of have that something that keeps her going. And that's incredible to me because, like I mentioned before, what is left for Elise Perry to achieve, right?
There are maybe no worlds left to conquer, right?
Like, yeah. Maybe you everything. Say Olympics 2028. That's like still that. A long way off. But, you know, there isn't anything. And she could very well have kind of stepped away from T20 cricket and, you know, said, look, you know, I've done what I can. I've won this many titles. I don't need to prove myself anymore. But I think for her personally, it's about how far she can take herself, in a sense, how far she can go. And that's what we've seen right throughout her career, right? Like, even with the bowling, she still bowls pretty quick. And you would expect her to have really pulled back on that. And although she hasn't been bowling much and she's had a few injuries, I think the ACL in 2020, I think she had a back stress fracture after that. She still bowls pretty quick. When she does get the opportunity. So it's almost like for her, she wants to see where her ceiling is, right? To test her limits.
She hasn't entered her Imran Khan phase of, I'm so good with the bat, I can bowl slow, medium pace, and no one's going to have a go at me anymore. So no, I think you're right. And I do think that it's interesting. She's 33. So she's not old in, you know, in professional cricket circles. But as we said before, women's cricket is very different. I think she's in year 17 of international cricket, if I'm not mistaken. And I would assume she started playing domestic cricket before that as well. So she's, you know, she's coming up to almost 19 or 20 years within the game. As you said, it would be, even if she just went, you know what, my game is more naturally suited to ODIs, right? I'm going to keep playing in ODIs. They might be able to find people who score quicker than me. They won't be able to find people who score as much as me. My bowling's still going to be handy and I'll play in the odd test. Clearly she just loves it, right? And it is a part of it. And also she is in almost every single way the first professional, right? As in, you know, she had sponsorships, I think well before, you know, anything was going on with the England women being, you know, professional. Elise Perry was professional and that's one thing that she's maintained all the way through her career. And that is slightly different because of the fact that she played multi-sports and everything else. She does, I don't want to say treat her body differently than other players, because there are a lot of professional women players now, but she's the first of the professionals, but she's also maybe one of the most professional players that we've seen. Like, she's always trying to find different ways to be successful and everything else. So there is an element, I suppose, of that, of like, what will she do afterwards? If in her mind, she's a professional athlete, right? And some players, you know, we see them and you can just see them thinking, okay, well, I've done this and I've won all this and now I'm off. And there are others who are like, well, I don't want to give it up. So I have to keep getting better and I have to keep changing that. And she's in a great system to be a professional as well, right? Yeah. Like, how many great players from other countries in women's cricket left early because they actually had to go and get jobs? I think Claire Taylor was an example of someone who just kind of left cricket earlier because, you know, she wanted to go and make money for a living, you know, and she was phenomenal. Whereas for Elise Perry, these might be her best earning years, might be the next 5 years, because there's more money in the game now than there was when she started. That's, again, very different to the arc of other professional athletes. Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Yeah, and like I mentioned before, with her bowling, that fitness side of things hasn't really, I mean, it doesn't seem like she's, you know, on the way down, right? She's still that fit player. And, you know, in the field, people don't really talk too much about it. She fails in the deep most of the time, right? You would expect your senior most players most of the time to be in the circle.
She should be at short fine leg.
But she feels on the boundary and she pulls off these, you know, acrobatic saves all the time. It's when you talk about her, I don't know, is there anything that you can find that you can be critical about? Because she's got the talent, obviously, but she's also got the work ethic to go with it, right? And it's something that I think a lot of her teammates also talk about, is that she is the most, like, the professional in the side, whether it's in training or, you know, in front of the media and out in the game. That professionalism is so evident in her. And, like, it's kind of, even when you do have a lot of good players and a lot of players who have some of those attributes, you don't really have and Elise Perry, right? Everything is, you know, available to her.
Well, that's how you end up dominating sport for two decades, right? So, you know, if you look at the great male all-rounders, most of them are incredible athletes, you know, Keith Miller and Kapil Dev and Imran Khan and Ian Botham when he was young, you know, Jadeja, you know, Jason Holder, Ben Stokes, just incredible athletes, right? And she is a world-class athlete. Like, you know, obviously, not only has she represented Australia in two sports, you probably could have added two or three more, right? Like she's got endurance, she's got fast muscle twitching and all that sort of stuff. You know, she's obviously quite quite well built and everything as well. She's strong, but she's also quite rubbery in her own way. So she's got so many different kinds of athleticism built on top of it, but I have watched other Australian women cricketers come through that I have thought they are incredible athletes. And, you know, and you see them come through and you go, oh, you know, what's going to happen here? Some of them just fizzle out, right? Yeah. They don't have the skills. They don't have the drive. They don't have the professional mindset. They don't have the mental toughness and everything else. And so she's been, you know, to go back to the Ian Botham side of things, right? Sometimes when you're that good, you don't always look after yourself, right? She's gone the complete other way with that. And those are the players who usually do play on until, as long as they keep the hunger, and that's the other part of it, right? Those are the sort of players that do really keep going, because they talk about this a lot in basketball, of your peak athletic age is probably 23 to 24, right? So even if you're a world-class athlete at 23, 24, you're not going to be a world-class athlete at 33 and 34, yeah, just because your body is going to slow down. But it's then matching it up with all the skills. And the funny thing is, I think that period from 2016 until 2022. I actually thought she was going into what I talked about before, that sort of Imran Khan stage of just like being like, well, I'm so skillful now, I'm just going to rely on my skills. And then, as you said, she hasn't done that. Like, so she's managed to stretch out her athletic peak longer than other people do through all the other things that, that, you know, that isn't available to everyone else. And she's also in a, I don't know the best way of putting this. You might be able to do this differently, but she's a leader within the team without being, she's almost like Pat Cummins before Pat Cummins was around, if that makes sense, in that she's not Belinda Clark. And she's not, some of those old Australian women's captains were like, you know, you as I said with Meg Lanning, you don't want to cross them. She's not that kind of leader. She's really the more that sort of, I don't know, what would you say, empathetic, emotive kind of leader. Not so much a natural captain, but someone who everyone looks up to naturally because of, I suppose, the way she plays the game and the way she prepares for the game.
Yeah, and that thought has been echoed, I think, from a lot of people who played with her, right? Just watching how she goes about things. It's a real, I think it's a great quality for a player to be a leader when you're not really the captain of the team. And you see that from her, in not just how she performs, but she's so generous with her time as well. I mean, if you look at kind of this Australian team that has dominated, one great quality they have is that they are generous with their time with opposition. You've seen them, I mean, I've seen them in Sri Lanka back in 2016 or 17, after games, talking to kids who'd come to watch the game, giving away their stuff, but also talking to the opposition, right? Discussing things, how to go about things. We saw that when Pakistan toured Australia as well. So Perry, I think we're seeing it more now because it's a lot more of the behind the scenes is visible to us through social media. But if you look at RCB, you get the sense that she does like to take the younger ones kind of under her wing to be, you know, that kind of bridge between the experienced players and the leadership group and the younger players. Obviously, I don't know her in real life, but she seems like someone who is very easy to approach, like you said. So even though she's not captain, and I'm sure in some teams she probably would have been forced into that role, right, of captaining.
I was wondering, she's clearly must have, she's captained a lot of games, but I was trying to work out who she would have captained for. So she has led, but she hasn't really needed to lead for Australia, right? I mean, that's probably the correct way of putting it. But you're right. I think with many other sides, just because of how good she was, she would have ended up being the captain, right?
And I wonder if that would have worked for her, because she does seem, even though, you know, she's really good with the media and good in front of a camera, she does seem like a person who doesn't like to, in a sense, have the spotlight on her. You see a lot of that when questions about her greatness or her performances are asked. She's very keen to kind of deflect things onto the team and how the team is doing well and how she wants to contribute to the team. So I wonder if that kind of, that official leadership role was given to her, how it would have changed things. But yeah, I just think the way she's gone about things in this WPL, because it's so visible now to us, highlights that, you know, the strengths are not just on the field and in terms of skills on the field, but outside as well.
Yeah, I just had a look. So she's captained 124 WPL games. So it's not that she doesn't want a captain, but I also think that I don't think it's something that drives her or that she needs to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But the fact that they've had better options at, you know, that they've been able to go to, I think is a big thing. Here's my last question. So I'm not massively surprised that she's worked out batting again. And so, you know, would you say 27% of RCB's runs? And, you know, I kind of expected her to make runs in the WPL. But when I saw she took a 6-wicket haul, I was still a little bit like, what? Like, what's happening here? That that on its own, I think, is probably, you know, that she won the WPL. She's probably, someone sent this on Wagon Wheel the other day, she's probably the most winningest cricketer we've ever had, you know, across genders just now. I don't know how many trophies she has compared to some of the other major players, but I'd be shocked if there are any other players with that level. But also the fact that she's just come in after not having bowled pretty much the first half of the tournament, and then she whips out a 6-wicket haul. You had to be shocked at that. Like, as much, and this is, what's the best way of putting it? We are used to her doing superhuman things, but she still finds levels that you don't really expect her to find. And at this stage in her career, to be able to do that in India and then end up being essentially more than a quarter of her team's batting, it's just, the whole thing's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes, you know, you look at a player like her, and like you mentioned, that 6-wicket haul, you know, she's going to make runs, right? And she's going to be in that top half of the run scorers list. But then she can also do that with the ball. It's incredible, because she went from basically not bowling to, I think in the eliminator, they were talking her up to be, you know, RCB's key bowler, RCB's, you know, strike bowler, which was insane, because I don't think the bowling really was factored in even when she was bought by RCB. Sure, they expected her to bowl a couple of overs, but not to be kind of that strike force, right? And she's the type of bowler, I feel, it's like, I saw someone had compared her to Stuart Broad on Twitter, where when she kind of gets it right,
yeah,
in slightly conducive conditions, there's really not much you can do with the way she bowls, right? When she gets it right, there's not really any defense that she can't get through.
Yeah. I've never thought of that comparison before, but that's what it is. It's because sometimes you watch her bowl and she's a little bit, I want to say mechanical, so you watch Marazan bowl and you think with Marazan at all times thinking, okay, I now need to try this, or I now need to look at this. Whereas you think sometimes with Perry, she's coming in and you're thinking to yourself, she's not in a rhythm here. She's just getting through her overs. And then those other days, like that spell against the West Indies back in, whenever it was, 2010, 2011, where you're watching it and you're just going, oh, good luck. Like, she's just, you're not going to be able to do anything here. She's a remarkable cricketer. But thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.